finally be letting things go? Maybe, Ethan says, but his tone isn't hopeful. So, can you send me his number?
I think it's better that you don't push him. Why don't you wait until you bump into him again and play it by ear?
Normally, that would be good advice. Shane crushed my feelings under the heel of his boot every time I tried to reach out to him during his senior year. And my mom and stepdad had to watch me crumble into tears on more than one occasion. Things are different now, though. I don't expect to be his friend. I wouldn't even want to be after the filthy deal he pushed me into making. Sex for a safe place to stay. It's pretty vile.
Okay, Dad, no worries. I'll probably see him soon. I've been getting out more lately.
Not alone, though, right?
No, I'm, trying to make some new friends. I'm being careful.
Good, he exhales. I know you're a level-headed young woman. I just remember when you were a whimsical 15-year-old. Not that there was anything wrong with that either, he adds hastily.
Ethan is never anything but completely supportive and wonderful to me. At the moment, it makes me feel guilty. Ethan lost Shane because of my mom and me. In his place, I doubt I could be so nice.
I wish the world wasn't such a grim place, Ethan continues. You should be able to walk anywhere you want at any time of the day or night without having to look over your shoulder.
I changed the topic. I saw the verdict on the Palmer case. Congratulations.
You saw it at Granthorpe? He asks, surprised. I wouldn't think Alumni News would make the front page, considering the story they're covering right now.
He means Casanova. I do not want to talk about that psycho, since that's another secret I'm keeping. It wasn't on my homepage. I looked it up.
How did you win it? It seemed so impossible.
That's exactly the right opening. Ethan immediately launches into his trial strategy. I smile. This is part of what I miss about living at home. I don't want to be a famous defense attorney myself, but I love hearing about the way Ethan attacks cases. His work fascinates me. I sit on a bench and chat with him for an hour. It's not until my battery starts chirping that I stand and tell him I have to go before my phone dies.
It's so good to talk to you, Ave. We'd love to see you. I can drive out and pick you up if you want to come home for the weekend.
Not this weekend, but soon. I miss you guys too.
Okay. Be careful. We love you.
My eyes sting. Ethan's the goddamned best. No matter how misguided those cameras were. Shane's a jerk for not forgiving him by now. Love you too, I say, before I end the call. As I head to the off-campus bus stop, I try to devise a strategy to convince Shane to reconcile with Ethan. My attention's occupied, which is why I don't see or sense anything before something splashes me in the face. My scream comes several seconds late because I'm so shocked. My eyes sting and I throw my hands up in defense. I can't see. Who did this? Is he still nearby? There's a sickeningly sweet scent. I drag the neck of my shirt over my eyes and face, terrified I won't be able to see. My vision is blurred for a moment, but blinking helps clear it. The sting continues. I think about the acid attacks on Muslim girls and freak out. I look around wildly, but the only person I see is a jogger in a hoodie sprinting down the path away from me. I drop to my knees, dig a half-empty water bottle from my bag, and dump it over my head. Then I use the dry bottom edge of my shirt to wipe my eyes and face over and over. My vision clears and the stinging goes away. I'm shaky and disoriented as I wobble to my feet. Jesus Christ! I look around again, but I don't spot a sneering aggressor anywhere nearby. There are just normal-looking people who watch me curiously. I'm half-drenched, and I must look wild with my smeared makeup and matted hair. I move quickly to the bus stop, still trying to process what happened. The jogger wasn't carrying a bucket. I'm not even sure he was the one who threw the liquid at me. It wasn't a big splash, though. I wonder whether it may have been from a squirt gun. What's that smell? I touch my face. It itches slightly, but doesn't sting or burn now. I pull my shirt up and sniff. Then I recognize the lingering scent. Oh, God. Roses.
Chapter 8. Shane. Her last class has been over for a while, and the sun's setting. I scowl as I look out the window. The whole point of her living here is so she won't be a target after dark. What's she doing screwing around on campus this late? I fire off a text. Shane, where are you? I tell myself it's not my problem if she's being reckless. That's her goddamn MO, after all. She was at the fucking Beta House frat party all alone after dark, too. I glance at the clock, and then catch myself pacing. Fuck this. If she's not back in 10 minutes, I'll go to campus to get her. And if I have to go, she's going to be punished for it. At that thought, temptation snakes through me. Below the belt, my lust for this girl is endless, against my better angels. Finally, I spot her coming up the walkway. I'm both relieved and pissed. She opens a door and stomps in and right past me. My eyes don't miss that her hair's damp, loose and matted to one side of her face, and her shirt's wet. It's stretched, too, like someone tried to tear it off. What the fuck? I follow her up the stairs. She reeks of sickeningly sweet perfume. What the hell happened to you? What do you care? On the upstairs landing, I grab her arm and turn her to face me. Answer me. Let go, she screams. She's only ever screamed at me one other time in our lives. The time she wanted me to turn around because she was naked. Screeching is not typical of Avery. So it gives me pause. Hey. I say in a low voice, trying to instill some calm. Lower your voice and tell me what happened. Her expression shifts. One second, she looks angry and harassed. The next, her chin's wobbling. Jesus, what the hell's up with her? She looks away, and I watch her face crumble. No. Inside, my muscles lock up. Something or someone happened to her. Even after I sent Sorensen to watch over her during her class, I should have gone myself. Avery, I say, leaning forward. Hey, what's going on? Can we just not? She asks, her voice cracking. Let go, Shane, please. For a year, all she did was beg me to talk to her and watch me with puppy dog eyes when I wouldn't. Now, when she seems to really need someone to talk to and I'm offering, she won't. I will never understand Avery Kershaw. Tears spill over her lashes. I pull her against me before I realize what I'm doing, and she leans in, letting me hug her. If that asshole, Todd Borderhatch, made her cry, I'm going to beat him to a bloody pulp. I need to take a shower. She mumbles. No argument about that. What happened? Overactive perfume sprayer in the quad? My attempt at levity seems to work. Fuck, she says on an exhale. Then she pulls away and scrubs the heel of her hand over her eyes, smudging her mascara all the more. She's like a raccoon. Except beautiful. Can we talk after I take a shower? Yeah. Go. She taps my fingers, and I realize I'm still holding her arm. Her eyes study my face, and something passes between us that is not anger or hate. I let go. Avery turns and hustles down the hall and into the guest bathroom. Standing in the hallway seems pointless and stalkerish, so I head to my own room. I sit in my desk chair, facing the open door. From my position, I hear when she leaves the bathroom and goes into her bedroom. When I decide she's had enough time to dry off and dress, I start thinking about going in after her. I'm impatient to know what's going on. Last night, during our discussion of ground rules, I claimed I wouldn't walk in without knocking, but today I decided that might have been a lie. My phone rings, and I check it. Ethan again? I swipe red, sending the call to voicemail. I'll talk to him later. "Hey," Avery says. Glancing up, I find she's standing in my doorway. Wet strands of silky dark hair spill over the shoulders of her t-shirt. If she's wearing a bra, it's not very thick, because her nipples are poking against the front of the shirt. She's got blue yoga pants on that are thin enough for me to bite through. Jesus Christ, this is not the moment to be focused on her body, but the outfit calls to me like she's wearing nothing.
"Come in."
From the doorway, she looks around the room, her eyes pausing on my king-sized bed. I can't help but wonder what she thinks of it, and whether she'll spend a night in it sometime. "I thought you didn't want me in your room," she says. That was another part of our agreement. She wasn't to come into my room. Period. Yesterday, I wanted there to be clear boundaries. Today, boundaries aren't looking so good. "Get in here," I say, nodding toward the wooden chest at the foot of my bed. She comes in and sits cross-legged on the chest, leaning her back against the footboard. With a makeup-free face and dressed in a t-shirt and yoga pants, Avery's back to looking like the beautiful teenage interloper who makes my cock so hard it's pure pain not to deal with it. "What happened today? Who made you cry?" She exhales heavily, and I'm hoping I'll just hear about some girl drama that will be easy to distract her from. Instead, what I hear causes me to sit forward and clench my teeth so hard, I'm close to snapping my jaw. I try to keep it together as she tells me someone sprayed her with something that included rose water. She doesn't know if it had another chemical in it or not. It got in her eyes and brought her to her knees on the sidewalk. She was scared it might be acid, so she diluted it by dumping spring water over her head. And after all that, she had to ride the bus home alone, scared, and crying, and covered in whatever the hell the guy splashed her with. That son of a bitch. If I get my hands on him, I will fucking end him. "It really sucks," she says.
"Why do there have to be psychopaths in the world? And why do they have to find me? Especially when I was having the best day?"
She shrugs and stands, hands shaky.
"Sometimes I don't know if I'm going to get through this shit," she whispers. Then she seems to pull herself together. "Anyway, that's what happened." This is the Avery of old. The one I wanted to make mine. The one I would have spilled blood to protect. My anger at the asshole who splashed her is still a blazing bonfire, so I don't really process her standing to leave until I circle back to it in my head. "Sit back down," I say. "Actually, no. Don't." She tilts her head with a look of confusion. I stand and put my arms out. "Come over here." Her big blue eyes get bigger. Then she walks closer, but not close enough. I pull her to me and wrap my arms around her. She melts against me, which doesn't help me remain sensitive to her stress. My cock only has one kind of objective where Avery is concerned. And the fact that she feels so fucking soft in my arms is a distraction. I cup the back of her head. Her hair is silky against my fingers. I'll find him. And when I do, I'll make him sorry he's alive. My voice is rough in all the ways there are for it to be that way. "I wish you would," she whispers,
her fingers stroking my back. If I don't let her go soon, I'm going to kiss her and then fuck her all night. There is no other possibility for how this moment ends. Until she speaks.
"You have to talk to Ethan."
"What?"
She pulls back so she can look at me. "I want you to call him. Maybe tonight."
My arms drop and I step back. The moment's over.
Whether or not I talk to my dad is none of your business, Avery.
The rift is hurting him so much. It's time to repair it. Shane, if you can forgive me, you can forgive him.
Christ, not again with this bullshit where they act as though they're the victims of undeserved neglect. Walking out of that house and limiting my interactions with the three of them was the only way I could stop her mother's constant warped paranoia and its fallout from shredding me to ribbons. Who says I've forgiven you? Avery's eyes narrow on my face, and she looks much older than 18. For the first time in my life, I understand how my father becomes such a pussy when his wife wants something. The way Avery looks at me gives me pause, fiery and beautiful. She acts like she's got the right to make demands. She almost makes me believe it. Almost. Her hands reach out and slide over my forearms, clutching. The smell of shampoo and beautiful girl hits me all over. You can't tell me that things haven't changed, Shane. I know they have. The blue of her eyes from under her lashes is like the Colorado sky, endless and fucking breathtaking. Careful, I tell myself. This is how one little siren takes the whole ship down. Some things are different, I say with as much neutrality as I can muster. Her slim hands move in to rest against my chest. The touch is deceptively light, but it packs plenty of power behind it, causing sensations to hum through me, making my balls ache, and making me want to touch her the same way. Time to change gears. Let's revisit how things are different. I unbutton my jeans, grab a pillow from the bed. Her eyes widen in surprise. Right now? Right now, I say, lowering my zipper. I grab a hand and draw it to me so she can feel how hot I am. She tugs a hand away. How about after? After. I stare at her blankly, unable to piece together what she's asking for. Does she want me to give her an orgasm first? If so, I'm down for that. My fingers catch the tie on her yoga pants. After what? She brushes my fingers off her drawstring. After you call Ethan, she says in an imploring tone. Jesus Christ, is she still on that? And did she put her hands on me just now to soften me up, so I'll do what she wants? Clever. Unfortunately for her, at the moment, soft is the last thing I am. I had a rough time today, Shane. You could do something nice. To restore my faith in humanity? I almost laugh. That's not what you really want. Her brows knit together. Yes, it is. This isn't about proving there's kindness and goodness in the world. What you want is to see if I'll give you your way. The flutter and eyelashes are a nice touch, by the way. Want to know what will work better? I point at the floor in front of me. She glares at me. Don't keep me waiting. When they talk about toxic masculinity, this is what they mean, no doubt. I snap my fingers and gesture to the bed's pillows. Her tight nipples and parted lips tell me she feels more than frustration right now. Her hips sway as she walks to the bed, and my eyes drop to her perfect peach of an ass. I want to sample all of her, and soon. Scooping up a pillow, she looks over the mattress. Is she thinking about what it would be like to be pinned to that bed underneath me? Returning to me, she drops the pillow between my feet and lowers herself. My breath is stilted. She takes my cock out and breathes on it. Jesus, that feels good. What did I do wrong last night? I don't understand what she means, partly because my brain's lost most of its blood supply. Wrong. Her cool fingers wrap around my cock, and my neurons forget how to fire. Just tell me how you want me to do this, so it can be over as fast as possible. Damn, that's cold. Practically ice water on my groin, but my cock soldiers on, standing stubbornly at attention. My brow arches. You want advice? You're telling me you want this over quickly means I'll make sure it isn't. My fingers grip her hair, twisting to make her head tip back. Now open that smart mouth, little girl. Her expression's startled a moment. Then she opens her mouth obediently. My thoughts distill down to one thing. I need her to blow me right now more than I need my next breath. I'm rough when I plow my cock between her lips. Her teeth scrape me, which I know isn't her fault. I still tap her cheek in warning, no teeth. She looks up at me through the fringe of dark lashes. Her eyes say she wants to kill me, which I like. Then her lips close around my cock like a velvet ribbon, and she suckles me. Fuck. She is going to get her wish to make me come in record time. I drag her off my cock by pulling her hair. Hey, she says, slapping my thigh. You'd better not slap, or you'll earn some slaps of your own, right on your pretty ass. My eyes trap hers. She doesn't look scared. She looks intrigued. It's almost too much to resist. Fisting my cock, I raise it and pinch the tip. Start lower. She looks at me curiously. Again, I've got the sneaking suspicion I'm only the first or second guy she's blown. I can't imagine how that could be the case when she's so pretty. I let go of her long enough to push my jeans and boxer briefs down to mid-thigh. I pull her forward, raising my cock again. She gets it, finally licking my sack. I watch her, giving her instructions on and off. It feels amazing to have my balls in her mouth. But half of my attention is on the way she moves, squeezing her thighs together and circling her hips as she works. Turning me on is turning her on, too. I step back, pulling free of her insanely soft mouth. Stand up. What's wrong? When my cock's a lead pipe, nothing's wrong. She licks her lips and then stands, watching me intently. Take off your pants, I say. What? No. My thumb strokes her tight nipple. She takes a startled step back. That's not part of the arrangement. It could be, I whisper in a husky voice. I want to go down on her in the worst way. I want to taste her. I want to make her legs shake. I want to make her come until she screams my name. My balls ache, reminding me that I also want to fuck her until she's so sore she has trouble walking. Her flushed cheeks blush harder. It's not a good idea. She lowers herself back to the pillow. Now what's this about? I can tell she's turned on. Why wouldn't she want me to give her an orgasm? Then she takes my cock in her mouth, and I forget to wonder about anything. She works the length of me with her tongue, stroking my balls for good measure. I couldn't fight the explosive orgasm she conjures even if I wanted to, and I don't. I let myself come, and my little princess swallows every fucking drop.
Avery. Between my legs, I'm hot and sticky. If Shane decided to pull down my yoga pants and panties right now, I wouldn't even resist. He's gorgeous, and something about the feel of him in my mouth makes me ache to have him inside me in other places. I also keep thinking about being in his arms and how tight he held me when I was upset. He promised to deal with the splasher guy. That was when I started down this dangerous path of wanting him so much it hurts. While his head is still tipped back and he's breathing hard enough to show off his outstanding pecs, I mumble something about leaving. Then I get to my feet and toss the pillow on the foot of his gigantic bed before I retreat from his domain. In my room, I close the shades, turn off all the lights, and get under the bed covers. With my eyes closed, I picture his face and the way it felt to have his hand on my breast. My hand snakes down the front of my yoga pants. I rub between my thighs, the fabric of my panties warm and damp. My fingers find their way into them, parting my soft folds, searching for the spot that will get me to orgasm fastest. I hear his voice, husky with arousal, when he told me to take my pants off. That voice was like being dragged over gravel and floating through clouds at the same time. It makes no sense that something can be both rough and tender. There's a tap on the door that startles me. Speak of the devil. It opens and I freeze, lying perfectly still, but blushing furiously. What's going on in here? His tone makes it clear that he knows exactly what's going on. What do you want? I ask, half embarrassed, half excited by his presence.
You know what would feel better than your hand between your legs?
The corner of his mouth curves into a sexy smirk.
Mine.
I don't turn my head to look at him. I don't dare.
Or my mouth, he adds. Or my cock.
I'm starved for breath by the time I let myself breathe. No thanks, I say in a raspy whisper. Then I finally risk a glance. Light from the hall makes him glow in the doorway as he leans against the doorframe. He's golden and gorgeous, like a lion on the African plains, effortlessly powerful with an animal grace. How does he make love? Is it the same as when he's sucked? A tantalizingly slow burn that gives way to hard thrusts? My breath catches again. My body wants to know how his would feel sliding against it. If he ignored what I said and climbed into bed with me, I wouldn't be able to stop him, not on any level.
You know what happens when you tease a man by claiming you don't want him when you actually do?
I'm silent, hanging on his next words.
He takes it as a challenge. It's been a while since anyone pretended to run from me. Do you want me to chase you?
I lie because I know I should. No.
Sure you don't.
Several moments of charged silence pass, making me want to squirm. Making me want to beg him to crawl into bed with me. I don't. Because I don't trust him not to hurt me. Finally, he speaks.
The thing I came to say was I'll take you back and forth to school from now on.
That earns him another look. Really? Until when?
Until I find the Rose guy and deal with him.
Yes, please. The police can't seem to do anything. Granthorpe is Gotham City. It needs its Batman. Deal with him how? I want to hear that he'll smash him to pieces for scaring me and every other woman on campus. I want Sheen to promise he'll pay Casanova back for every girl he ever hurt. Then, I wonder what's wrong with me. Why do I want violence on top of violence? What I should wish is for the police force, not my stepbrother, to find Casanova. He doesn't answer my question, which is probably a good thing. Instead, the corners of his mouth tug into a small smile, and he says,
"Night, Avery."
I wake from a nightmare where a faceless man holds my head under rose-scented water. I hear creaking steps, and I'm paralyzed with fear. Someone's right outside my door. My heart slams against my ribs, and my mind races. Casanova's gotten into the dorm again. If I scream, will he go? All of the sudden, I realize I'm not in the residence hall. The creaks are coming from the old wooden stairs in Shane's house. My pounding heart slows. I'm not in danger. Shane's here. In fact, it's probably him on the stairs. I roll onto my side and read the clock. 3 a.m. Waiting silently, I listen as the stairs continue to quietly creak. I'm confused because it sounds like he's going up and down over and over. Is he exercising? Did he wake from an unshakable nightmare too? Of course not, I think an instant later. What could possibly be scary enough to scare him? I climb from my bed and open the door a crack. There's definitely a light on down the hall.
Pushing the door open a sliver more, I look out. That's when I see Eric Sorensen carrying crates up the stairs and into the usually locked room. The men speak in low voices, and then Eric goes back downstairs. A moment later, the light flicks off and, after my eyes adjust, I see the outline of Shane's body. He locks the door to the middle room and goes down the stairs too. I glance at the clock again, 3:07. At 14 after, I hear the front door close. Moments later, there are footsteps on the steps. Ones that eventually reach the second floor and head down the hall to Shane's bedroom. I close the door silently, staring at it for a moment. As I climb back in bed, I know one thing for certain. Nothing legal is delivered at 3 a.m. Chapter 9. Avery. Shane's car is a perfectly maintained 15-year-old silver Porsche Carrera GT. It's a 2-seater roadster that's so beautiful, I want to give it a kiss. I don't care about cars, but no one alive wouldn't admire this one. The motor purrs like a cat, and the stick shift is topped with a golden brown piece of wood varnished to a high gloss. "What are you doing for dinner tonight?" Shane asks as he pulls out of the driveway. I shrug, glancing at his hand on the gear shift. He has great hands. "Do you have a dress or some heels on campus? Or just at my dad's?" "Yeah, I have a couple dresses. Why?" "After class, I'll take you to the dorm to change. And you'll come with me to dinner in Back Bay." "What's in Back Bay?" "My grandfather's house." "Since when?" "Ethan's dad lives in Connecticut." "Yeah, it's my other grandfather." I cock my head, confused. "I thought your mom's dad passed away." "I guess that makes the old man a zombie. Imagine that." "What in the world? Why did I think his maternal grandfather had passed?" My mind scours its memories. I can almost swear. Yes, I'm sure my mom told me that. She obviously believes that to be the case, which means maybe Ethan gave her that impression for some reason. My eyes are glued to Shane's handsome profile. He's not quite clean-shaven, but his stubble is much shorter and neater than it was yesterday. And he's wearing a white button-down shirt with his jeans. Apparently, he's dressed for dinner, too. Are you saying Ethan lied?
I'm saying your mother lied, and my father didn't contradict her.
I stiffen. My instinct is to be outraged on Mom's behalf, but listening is important. There are things I should have known that I didn't until Shane confided them. Why would she lie?
You'll have to ask her.
He always makes it difficult to get information from him, which is frustrating. I think you have a theory, Shane. A strand of his hair comes out from behind his ear. Without thinking, I tuck it back for him, my thumb grazing his jaw in the process. Shit! Do not touch him. His head turns briefly to look at me speculatively. I give my shoulder a penitent shrug. Sorry.
It's fine.
It's definitely not fine. We're not dating. When I tried to get him to mend fences with Ethan, Shane ordered me to my knees. That's our relationship. I'm servicing his needs like a sex worker. My arms fold across my chest, closing me down. Then I think about the way he hugged me when I was upset. And it causes an unwanted warmth to spread through my chest again. I liked that he did that. I'm sure that's not the way a man touches a prostitute. We're in uncertain territory. Well, I ask, trying to get back to the topic of his not really dead grandfather.
I think your mother wants to pretend there's no first Mrs. Morin. And she's definitely not interested in going to Back Bay for the holidays with my mother's family. Before you guys showed up, my dad came with me at least once a year.
Ethan wouldn't let a new wife keep you from seeing your grandfather. He's too good a dad.
Father of the Year.
Rubbing the bridge of my nose, I look away. He never meant to hurt you, Shane. You must know that. I'm sure everything he did was to put my mom, his new wife, at ease, and convince her I was safe. Was it so wrong for them to try to protect me?
Seems to have worked out, Princess, with you trading blowjobs so you can live with me.
I wince and then purse my lips. There. See? We're definitely not heading into a real relationship. And who demanded blowjobs as rent? Seems like our parents were right all along to worry you'd exploit me.
I wait for the explosion.
I guess they were.
His voice is calmer than I expect. But the dangerous undercurrent is there.
Ethan should have let Sherry castrate me with the garden shears when she asked him to.
I sigh and roll my eyes, staring out the windshield. Despite what happened, I don't believe things were ever as bad as he seems to think. Yes, my mom was probably cautious, but she doesn't go around trying to emasculate men. If Shane made her extra paranoid, it was probably because she sensed there was something brewing between us. And she knew my level of experience back then was nil, when his certainly wasn't.
Answer something seriously, I say. When they told you to stay away from me, did it make you want things more? Did you plan to defy them?
He didn't say I had to stay away from you. She's the one who said that.
Did Mom really say that to him, so baldly? Because that would practically be an accusation in and of itself. No matter how worried she was about me, she shouldn't have spoken to Shane that way. He'd been abandoned by one of his parents, just like I had. Mom knows how tough that is for a kid. If she'd tried first to be a good stepmom to Shane, their relationship might have been so different. Sunlight drives through the windshield like a golden white laser. Shane takes aviator sunglasses from the console and puts them on.
My dad wanted me to treat you like a little sister.
You tried at first, didn't you?
You were there. You know exactly what I did.
Tucking my hair back, I glance at him and then at the road.
You did try, I say, remembering how kind and generous Shane was with his attention that first year.
I was flattered. I milked it, I admit. Can you open this jar for me, Shane? Can you reach the lemonade pitcher on the top shelf for me?
The corners of his mouth twitch.
I need 4 sandbags for my science project. They're really heavy. Will you help me?
A small smile forms. Yeah, those. He never even let me touch the sandbags. For him, carrying them was nothing. The car hums along the highway.
This car is a stick of butter on 4 wheels, I murmur. True statement.
Growing up, my dad was barely ever around, and my mom's boyfriends before Ethan, I never got to know them all that well. When we moved in with you guys, Ethan was so nice. It was like he loved doing things for us.
What he loves is having a trophy wife who strokes his ego, among other things.
I roll my eyes. She's not a trophy wife. I press my back into the seat, staring out. He loves us, and we love him. My thumb rubs the knee of my jeans, smoothing the fabric. I should have asked him to help me with the science project sandbags.
Sure. When the heaviest thing my dad lifts most days is his gold-plated pen.
You act like he's not fit. He jogs.
For the endorphin rush. If you'd asked him to move sandbags, he'd have said sure and then paid the gardener to do it.
I chuckle. Probably. I glance at Shane's profile, then back at the road. Looking back, though, I still shouldn't have asked you. I knew there was something wrong about it. Other girls mentioned their dads or brothers doing things for them, moving furniture, hanging shelves. It seemed normal on the surface. He's silent.
You never acted like it bothered you.
Because it didn't.
But the only time I asked you to do things was when no one was close enough to overhear me. That's what made it sketchy.
It's one of the things.
There's a teasing note to his voice, which makes me smile. You could have stopped it any time. If you'd said no even once, I wouldn't have asked again.
There was no need to shut it down. It was innocent.
It was flirting.
My gaze slides to his profile, assessing him. As per usual, his face is unreadable.
I was 15. I didn't realize it at the time.
That's why it was innocent.
I wait, but he doesn't say more.
As usual, no conversation with him feels like enough.
You just admitted you understand I was too innocent to know what I was doing around you, Shane.
But you still blame me for not being experienced enough to instantly realize you didn't touch me while I was drunk?
His jaw works, and he shakes his head.
Do you need me to spell it out for you?
He asks as he pulls into a GU parking lot.
Yeah, I guess I do.
First of all, if I'd wanted to touch you, I didn't need to wait until you were unconscious. You had a crush on me. If I'd wanted to fuck you, I wouldn't have needed to get you blackout drunk to do it. And I definitely wouldn't have left you naked on the couch for our parents to find. You were the virgin, not me. I knew where to take a girl if I wanted to get laid.
My stomach knots at the thought of him with other girls. All right. But I didn't know you knew about the crush, and I didn't think about the fact that you probably knew where to take girls so you wouldn't get caught.
Aside from that, you're living in my house right now for a reason, Avery. What is it?
What? My head tilts in confusion.
I'm afraid of Casanova. But why did you come to me, specifically?
Because I feel safe at your house.
Exactly. Deep down, you know if Casanova, or anyone, is stupid enough to try to hurt you when I'm around. It will end badly for him. You know I'll protect you, even when I hate you. If you know it now, then you definitely knew it at 16, when I gave you anything you wanted. The second Sherry started spewing her bullshit that day, you should have put an end to it. I needed you to set the record straight, Avery. I asked you to. Instead, you were quiet, then you bolted, leaving things to spin out of control. The cops were ready to arrest me for rape. They came close.
His voice is a growl and he shakes his head, his mouth a grim line as he relives the moment.
I'd do anything to be able to make him forget it.
That wasn't the first time a self-centered woman broke my heart, he says softly, making my own heart break at the reference to his mom's desertion. But it's the closest anyone's come to destroying my entire life.
Chapter 10. Shane. She's upset and needs a minute, so I get out of the car and leave her to pull herself together. The truth is, I need a minute too. Until she got to Granthorpe, I thought I had all this shit in a locked box that I never needed to touch. Now we're fucking unboxing all over again. As I wait, a part of me wants to get back in the car to comfort her because, for once, she's not trying to rationalize or excuse anything, and, for once, I actually believe that it really didn't occur to her how bad things could get if she didn't speak up to defend me. Sherry sounded as though there was no doubt about what happened, and I guess Avery wasn't capable of piecing the truth together and reacting fast while she was so hungover. I wonder whether Ethan could have convinced me of a lie under those circumstances. Definitely not at 16. But when I'd been younger and as innocent as Avery was, maybe. At 13 or 14, I might have confused a lie for the truth for a few minutes. I do know one thing. Even if I'd been 14 and believed a lie in which Avery betrayed me, if she'd begged me to rescue her, I would have. and I'd have covered for her in a heartbeat when the police came. There is zero chance I would have let them take her away in handcuffs. Zero. Protecting her back then was pure instinct. Anywhere, anytime. I couldn't have stopped myself if I'd tried. That's what eats at me. That morning I was drowning. I asked her to save me, and she let me sink. Maybe over time she'd have stepped up to defend me more forcefully. We'll never know because of my father. As fucked up as being spied on by my dad was, it did save me. I haven't forgotten that. As any good lawyer will tell you, having ironclad documentation of the truth comes in handy, if you're innocent. The door opens and she emerges from the car. Her eyes are red, and she doesn't look at me. Let's take a walk to the bus stop, I say, wanting to move on from the topic that keeps coming back to haunt us. I want to see where the guy splashed you with the rose water. She leads the way, and we walk in silence. The task at hand helps to distract me. I look for anything that looks wrong. Trampled plants, a snapped branch, footprints in the dirt. I spot nothing. From the layout, I agree with her that it was probably the jogger in the hoodie who splashed her because the tight row of bushes along the path would have made it hard for anyone to approach her from the side. Since the guy splashed her face, it had to be someone who approached her head-on, which is ballsy as hell. When I ask if he could have been wearing a mask, she shrugs. I was looking down. Who knows you're staying with me? She flinches, and I realize maybe my tone sounded rough to her. That's not how I meant it to sound. No one. Avery's arms cross over her chest, her hands rubbing her upper arms. My tone is intentionally lighter when I speak again. You didn't mention it to anyone? You sure? I'm sure. The bus you took to get to my house has an off-campus route. Not a typical bus for you? She swallows, glancing at the path thoughtfully. Not normally, no. But I walked to the stop several times when I was bringing clothes and books to your house. Anyone watching me could have seen me and figured out I was moving off campus. All right, let's go take a look at your dorm room. We're again silent on the walk, and she's subdued. I decide that today's conversation is the last one she and I are ever having about that morning 2 years ago. We understand each other's perspectives now. It's enough. At our residence hall, I look around outside. Nothing unusual. Then she takes me in and shows me where she found the purple rose. A random event is easier to figure in the dorm. All Casanova had to do was walk in during the party, wait until the hall was clear, pick the lock, and walk into her room. There's no way to know whether he targeted her specifically that night, or if his time in her room was what triggered him to start stalking her. If it is Casanova, he's being more brazen than he's ever been. In some cases, serial killers and rapists do get bolder and more reckless over time. Some even make calls or send notes to the cops and news media as a taunt. But announcing a specific target before an attack is crazy. For all the guy knows, the whole police force could be watching Avery and waiting for him to strike. That piece of things feels off. Of course, anyone who hunts women the way he does is off. He left the rose in the bed. Maybe he planned to take her that night. He could have planted the rose so it'd be found in the morning after she disappeared, but he wasn't waiting in the room. Why not? Maybe because it would have been difficult to take her out of the building without being seen? Lit hallways, girls coming and going? He could have been watching her for a while and known there's no boyfriend or roommate and that she often walks around alone. That night, he could have planted the rose and then waited somewhere along the path, maybe near a parking lot where he has a vehicle on nights when he takes them. But on the night of the beta party, Avery didn't walk home alone. Declan was with her. Maybe Casanova planned to take Avery but changed his mind, and it was too late to get the rose back. If she's the one that got away, and he's angry about that, it could be why he's still stalking her. Avery sits on the edge of her bed, rubbing her arms. I don't want to go to dinner. Can you drop me off at your place so you can stay there alone? Absolutely not. She looks away, biting her lip. I'm not feeling like a night out. Is she serious? We've just taken a tour of Casanova's greatest hits. Is she really so uncomfortable around me right now that she'd risk her life? Her blue eyes practically bore a hole in the wall. Apparently, making eye contact is also off the menu. If I skip dinner, it would give us both some breathing room. We could use it, don't you think? No. I sit down next to her. I believe you. You couldn't see the truth. Shane, I did defend you. I just wasn't as forceful as I needed to be. I didn't understand how things could escalate, even in the absence of evidence. If I'd known, okay. That's enough about that. Let's talk about tonight. I'm not leaving you alone at my place or anywhere else. It's not safe. Her brows pinch together, and she rubs the back of her neck, exhaling a frustrated sigh. If you hate me so much, why are you helping me? I shrug, mock perplexed. Maybe I like seeing you on your knees with my cock in your mouth. Avery sucks in a breath and turns her head to look at me, a spark of outrage lighting her eyes. Good. God damn it, Shane. A smirk threatens, but I squash it. She's not ready to joke yet. Look, I've said all I need to say about the past. I've also heard what I needed to hear from you. Let's turn the page on that chapter and call it over, can we? She asks, hopefully. Yeah. Her fingers pick at her jeans. We can't start fresh if we hate each other. It's the second time she's mentioned the word hate, which tells me it's bothering her that I used that word. She's angling for me to take it back. I don't want to get pulled down a rabbit hole into another deep, dark conversation about feelings. Once was more than enough, but I can't resist telling her what she seems to need to hear. I don't hate you, Avery. Her shoulders turn toward me, and she looks relieved. Let's try to wipe the slate clean, all right? My brow cocks. How clean? Completely. I lean my mouth against the shell of her ear and whisper, if you're asking me to give up the dirty way you're paying me to protect you, my answer is no. She shudders, her nipples puckering like arrowheads through the fabric of her shirt. You're a monster, she says, but her tone's mild. You're right, but that suits you and always has. What? Her brows crinkle. No, it doesn't. It did when I was the monster obsessed with you. She blows out a breath, but doesn't try again to deny that she likes my dark side. Good for her. We're all about the raw truth today. Raw truth seems to suit us too. Even the pain. Get out while I change, she says, glancing around the small room. I raise an eyebrow. I've seen her naked. She's been eye level with my cock and sucked it twice. Bouncing me so I don't see her bra and panties seems a bit much. She pushes on my shoulder. Come on. I rise and step out into the hall to wait. Avery can have her moment alone. For now. Chapter 11. Shane. When the door opens, I lose my train of thought. Avery's wearing a sapphire blue dress that wraps around her body, hugging her in all the right places. Her hair's fallen in fuck-me waves over her shoulders. Her eyes are smoky with indigo powder, and she's traded her glasses for contacts. From Diana Prince to Wonder Woman in less than an hour. I stare at her with the kind of hunger wolves reserve for a fresh kill. Avery checks to be sure the door's locked, and then turns. Ready. So I see. Does she know she looks like she tumbled off a Maxim cover? The day's been rough. Maybe the outfit is her idea of revenge, her way of making me burn for her all the way to Back Bay. If it is, so be it. The burn will be my appetizer. We head down the hall and into the elevator. The temptation to stop it so I can pin her against the wall and do dirty things hits me hard. Unfortunately, we don't have that kind of time right now. I'll have to wait until I get her home for that. When we reach the car, she strokes the door while waiting for me to open it. My cock is suddenly jealous. Once we're on the expressway, I drive 70 to Back Bay. Half my attention isn't on the road. It's on Avery in my passenger seat. The wild, sexy hair makes me want to wind it around my hand later so I can pull her head back as I fuck her. When we reach my grandfather's house, I punch in the code to open the gate. Security is always a priority at his place. Avery's eyes widen as the mansion comes into view. The row of five domed cut glass windows that are topped with offset clover-shaped ones are reminiscent of a medieval castle in Ireland. They never fail to impress. When we get out, I come around and open the door to escort her to the front step. My hand can't resist touching her lower back, like she's mine to guide. Like she's mine. It's a bad idea to think of her that way, but I'm a man who goes for bad ideas like they're covered in chocolate. My grandfather opens the door, and my brows rise. The old man's 70, but he pumps iron regularly and looks about 2 decades younger than he is. I told him I was bringing a girl to dinner, and he apparently decided to dress for the occasion. Normally, when I come over, he's in khakis and an Oxford. Today, he's wearing pressed black dress pants, a white shirt, and a blue silk tie. And damn, the tie matches her dress almost exactly. "This is Avery," I say. She's Sherry's daughter. "Avery, this is Joe Sullivan, my grandfather." I wait for either of them to have a startled reaction, but all they do is smile at each other like they've just spotted their long-lost love. My eyes narrow. Apparently, she doesn't recognize his name, and apparently he's not going to hold it against the pretty girl that his former son-in-law married her mom. The entryway is all black and white Italian marble and would look more appropriate in a hotel lobby in Vegas, but Avery marvels over it. She stares up at the black crystal chandelier for at least 20 seconds. "You like it?" Pops asks. "Mariona picked everything out." "I love it. Riona's your wife?"
"No. My daughter. Shane's mother."
"Oh, my gosh, I should have known her name. I'm so sorry."
"Shane, you don't talk about your mother."
"Definitely not." I think grimly. "Shane doesn't talk about anyone," Avery says quickly, with a conspiratorial smile. "Becoming a talk show host is not in the cards for him, I'm afraid." Pops laughs and puts out his arm to escort her inside. She slides her arm through and holds his as he takes her on a tour. I follow behind them, looking at her peach of an ass and biding my time. In the living room, he shows her pictures of celebrities and tells stories. She laughs at all the right places and jumps in with her own one-liners. I haven't seen her this relaxed and animated in a long time. The underlying irony isn't lost on me, but I still like it more than I should.
"Do you look like your mom?"
the old man asks her. "A bit. I got her lips and her nose," she says, touching her face. "But her eyes are brown."
"You know who you look like."
He walks her over to a picture and points.
"That's my wife, Siobhan, God rest her.
She got a bit of the black Irish with the hair, and she had eyes as blue as the sea, like yours."
"As blue as the sea? Seriously?"
Avery doesn't bat an eye, so Pop sails onward, talking and showing off more family photos. He always claims he was a lady killer in his day. As a kid, I had an entirely different impression about what that meant until he explained the slang. At the time, I didn't really buy that he had a way with women. Now I see I misjudged him, because Avery's hanging on his arm and his every word.
"Siobhan walked into a room and took every man's breath away," he announces. "That's Ree, too.
Just the same." He points to a picture of my mother sitting at a cliffside cafe. "Beautiful." Avery agrees. "She looks like a movie star." "Where is this?"
"Portugal."
"She lives there, with a useless husband and 2 ugly cats. Avery laughs. His smile widens. He likes all pretty women, but especially the ones with a great sense of humor.
"Come, let's get to the kitchen where I've got the treasure stashed."
Her eyes twinkle. "Sounds perfect." The old man takes us into the white marble and silver kitchen and pours himself a whiskey and us some iced chocolate concoction.
"If you dare, lad," he says, raising his glass. I cock an eyebrow and sniff what's in my glass. Smells like cocoa and maybe...